What is up, everybody? Welcome back to In My Non-Expert Opinion. I'm your host, Chelsea Reif, and I'm a podcast strategist who helps people launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts. I'm recording this live right now from an Airbnb in Albania. I was at a retreat in Greece all week last week, and it was the clarity I needed. I really, really needed to slow down and unplug, and I got a lot of that. It was a lot of sleeping on the beach, a lot of reading, and it was also a yoga and writing retreat. So there was yoga in the morning, writing in the evening, and of course, I'm going to do a whole recap on that, but I am now in Albania. And as I was leaving to Albania, I started to get comments both from people at home, people here, people that are in my friend group of like, wait, Albania, is that safe? You know, I haven't heard great things about Albanians, or I don't know, like Albanians have this and this reputation. And this is stuff I hear all the time when I go to South America, when I go to Cape Town, when I go anywhere that's just not as touristic as, let's say, a metropolitan city like Paris or Madrid. There's always commentary like this. But I can understand that when we are watching the news all day and listening to true crime podcasts and constantly taking in negative stereotypes from the media, it's hard to unhear or unsee that. And I get it, right? I hear these things all the time. Drug cartel, the mafia, the mob, criminals. And while I get it, I think it makes me sad. And I think this is why I encourage people to travel so much, so you can open up your eyes and see a different culture than you, and that not everything is as it seems in the news or the media. Funny enough, this is actually what my guest and I, Melissa Barham, talk about today. So Melissa is a business and purpose coach, and she also runs the Pursuit of Purpose podcast, and she's a fellow female solo traveler. She has been to so many incredible places. And we start the episode just talking about the mishaps of travel and the whole issue around safety that a lot of female solo travelers are wary of. And we get into really interesting stories as well about our travels, about things that are silly that we, you know, should have charged our phone, should have maybe bought the data package, this, that, and the other thing, or more serious ones. And I'll let you listen through to the whole episode to hear those. Now, you are going to hear a huge plot twist on this episode that may shock you, and it's about cancer. If this has affected your life in any way, whether it's you that's been diagnosed or a friend or a family member or someone in your community, I think you're really going to enjoy Melissa's story to hear her perspective on life and mortality and purpose. It's a very real episode. We joke, we laugh, we ponder, we reflect, we regret, we zoom out, we zoom in. So without further ado, let's dive into this week's episode of Melissa Barham. Melissa K. Barham, welcome to the show. I am so excited to talk to you today.
So excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
I think we need to take our listeners behind the scenes of what just happened. I am currently in London. I'm in a flat for like 20 days. And I actually just had to come home from a lunch that was 45 minutes away by the tube. And so it took almost an hour to get there on the way and then 45 minutes back. And then as I'm here, trying to find a quiet room, trying to find the converter plug that actually will make my phone charge and my laptop charge, finding a room that you can't hear a bunch of echoing. And this is pretty much how my life goes for a lot of the time. And I know you are also someone who travels a lot. What's something that's just so annoying with tech or setting up or anything that you're like, wow, this part of traveling sucks?
I find that the people that I'm with don't do the similar things that I'm with. So be it my family or my friends or whatever. So I'm like lugging around. My microphone is huge. I need a smaller one. But I'm like lugging around a microphone and I'm like packing it in a suitcase or whatever. And people are like, why are you bringing that? You have a brick. And I'm literally in a closet right now. So trying to find somewhere where you're like, okay, it's not too big. It's not too echoey. Yeah. And no, and everyone thinks you're like a freak running around trying to plug things in. And yeah.
Yeah. The running around plugging things in, I think, is like the next name of my podcast. It's just like constantly what I'm doing. And I don't think people realize that, because obviously when you look at Instagram, you're seeing people working by the pool and people working in this gorgeous Airbnb or whatever the case is. But countries have different converters. Countries have different times that they close things. All the cafes in London that I live around right now close at like 2. I don't really start my workday until 2 here because all my clients are in the US. So I'm like heading off to the cafe and they're like, we close in 5 minutes. I'm like, God damn it. So annoying. So I just know that we're going to really get into some travel stories today, because both of us have quite a few of them. And I'm curious, like this year alone, where have you been and what are some of your favorite things that you've done?
Okay. I just came back literally 2 days ago from a whole month not being at home. So I called it my 8-stage summer because I had like stages of things I had to complete. So it was like hiking and backpacking and then Taylor Swift in Seattle and then a wedding on Vancouver Island and then more hiking in Idaho and lake. And so I just came back from a whirlwind, but for the whole year, one of my favorite things that I did, which was totally on a whim, was for my birthday, which is in February. And at the time when I booked this, I was already on a cruise with my family. So in January, because they just like getting out of winter. And I literally got sold this by an Instagram ad, probably like highest purchase via Instagram ad. But it was for this surf camp, and I'll rep the company. It's called Bare Bones. And it's these two girls from the States that just like met each other and decided to make a surf camp in El Salvador, like, I don't know, 6 months earlier. So it wasn't established. They didn't really have a good website or anything. And for whatever reason, I thought this was a good idea because I like surfing is one of the sports that I've been like trying to learn more of. So yeah, literally booked it as I'm getting on a cruise ship. I'm like, I don't know what I'm booking, but here we go. And went to El Salvador for my birthday for a women's camp for surfing. So that was pretty cool.
That is so sick. And you excited me about surfing again. And it made me want to look into that trip. And it actually prompts a question that I think people just heard what you said and said, you know, the website wasn't even really up and running. They weren't established. I just booked it as I got on the cruise. Why would you book something that you didn't have a lot of like testimonials or credibility and like the website wasn't even that great? Like what prompted that?
Yeah, I think this is a big thing of like learning and practicing. And I'll always say practicing to this because I don't think it's just like learn and you know it, but practicing leading with intuition versus leading with logic. And I think that comes like there's, I think we can gel on so much of that just within traveling itself. But I look for that too, especially with the things that I am like led by. And I'm a generator in human design. Like my main thing is to feel and respond. And so I saw it before I left for our trip with my family. And then I always wait on stuff. Even when I'm shopping, like I'll see something and then I'll just like wait on it and feel into it and like wait to see if I'm still thinking about it, whatever. And so with this one, I saw it and it was like a lazy Sunday. I'm curled up on like a little armchair in my house and just kind of came across it. And it, the same way that people have energy, I think opportunities have energy and ideas have energy. And so when I saw it, it kind of just like made a spark for me. And I was like, I don't know what it is, but I think the rawness of how they designed the trip, it really was like, we're not about fluff. We're not about like massages and yoga and all like the good chef food and stuff. And like this place with a pool, it's literally this like hostel place that we have a relationship with the locals here. We work with the local president of the ISA in El Salvador. He teaches you. That's called Bare Bones for a reason. It's cheap because we give you surfing and it's a community with women. And I was like, that just, it made a spark for me. And then I waited on that and it still felt like the right thing to do, especially kind of like I was looking for something to do to celebrate my birthday and craving, I think, craving connections with more women because I had been on a surf week that I like self went on in November in Maui, which in Lahaina actually, which is like so sad with what's happening right now. And that was like really transformative for me. So I wanted another opportunity that was like women, pretty raw, kind of unstructured. And that sort of fell in my lap. So I took that as its own sign of like, okay, this is what you're meant to do.
And what about the safety aspect? Because I know there's some people tuning in right now that are like, oh, El Salvador, isn't it? South America, it's so sketchy. Do you even know anything about it? And you know, I hear these comments all the time of like, whoa, aren't there drug cartels around there and blah, blah, blah. You know, people have all their opinions of what they see on the news and the media. And I know people genuinely want to travel and just don't maybe have the tools or know where to start. So how do you make sure something is safe and that you know you're going to be taken care of when you get there?
Yeah, it's a really great question. And I'm sure with all the places you've been to and that have a appearance of being a certain way, like you did have a lot of the same comments. I am a risk averse person more so in my life. But when it comes to that, I think that a lot of our, I'm not saying like those risks don't exist and aren't true, but I think a lot of what we are afraid of as people is from our minds. And so people are still people. There's always going to be good and bad wherever country you go into. I'm honestly more scared going to the US a lot of the times than I am going to any of these other countries. Like, I was literally, and I'm not knocking Idaho, but like I was literally driving through Idaho and some of the signage that I see, I'm like, holy crap, get me across the border. because just it's people's perspectives, right, that are a lot different than yours. And I think first and foremost, it comes down to don't be dumb. Like, there is an aspect of like having know-how, and maybe you have to go through a poor experience, hopefully not like a really bad one, but maybe you have to go through a poor experience traveling first to go, wow, I'm naive and I shouldn't do X, right? I shouldn't put my phone in my back pocket when I'm traveling through Europe. Like, you're going to get your phone stolen once if you do that. But I think it's that one, just like learning over time, like what is kind of the smart choice and what's not. My dad would always say this thing to me as well. He's like, listen to the little voice. And it's funny that he said that to me as a child, because he's not someone who believes in like intuition and spirituality and all that sort of stuff. But that was always my first forte when I was a little kid of like, oh, what's the little voice? And it's kind of that ping where you're like, oh, this seems sketchy. Get the hell out. So, I mean, I go to Paris all the time and like it has how many things going on there that are, you know, risky all the time. So, but we don't think about it the same way because, oh, it's a Western country. So with El Salvador, like I wasn't in San Salvador. Like, yes, there's a lot of violence and everything going on there. And I did look into it, obviously, but I'm in a gated community. It's called Surf City. They hold the world, like they just held the World Cup there for surfing, like the world competition. It's literally for surfing. Like, we're fine.
It reminds me when I went to Cape Town, I remember telling my family and, you know, friends I was going, and there were so many people like, whoa, Cape Town, I've been in South Africa, really scary. And we had a language and culture class to immerse ourselves when we got there. I went with Remote Year, the company I always talk about. And the city managers actually pulled up a slide and they were like, this is what you probably think you're getting into and what your family thinks you're getting into. And here's what the reality is. And the picture they showed was like violence in the street, people fighting, you know, torches being lit, like war everywhere, poverty. And then the reality was like, no, that's certain pockets and certain portals of time that those things happened. But that is not happening on a day-to-day regular basis in the places we're staying, on the sidewalks, in the exact locations. It's like that's what we think we see. And to your point, in reality, if you actually look sometimes at your own surroundings, it's like it's a little scarier to be where you are. It's just what you're seeing in the media. I also agree, when I went back home, we went to go see Barbie and someone ran in the theater and screamed something and I flipped the fuck out. I was like, oh my God, this is it. Like, there's going to be a shooting. Like, what do I do? And that's, isn't that crazy to think that that could have been, that has happened plenty of times in Florida. The gay club that got completely destroyed a few years ago was an hour away from me. And it's interesting that people can't look at our own biases, like you said, our own perceptions, and be like, people around the world think America is the scariest country in the world, but we, you're not American, you're Canadian, but we tend to just look at it as like, oh, well, not in my neck of the woods. And that's kind of what I have to remind people is exactly where I'm traveling to is a specific area that like, that's not happening there. Just how when you defend your own hometown and wherever you're from, you're like, it's not really happening here. And of course there are bad people and bad things everywhere. But like, if you're going into the mindset that anywhere you travel outside of your bubble is scary or dangerous, then that's how you're going to perceive the world.
Exactly. I think that it's one of, not just with the risk factor of traveling, but like it just comes down to traveling in a nutshell and the perspective that you go into it with, because, and solo travel will do that to you and open your eyes. So this is why I think we both say like, please go do it, just to like make yourself a better person. But we live in the comfort zone that we have. So even if like you live in Florida all your life, 5 minutes away from where that happens, you probably, all those people in that area around you are going to be like, oh, Florida's a great place to live. It's really safe, da da da, because they're used to it. And they're like, ah, yeah, someone might pull one out at a movie theater, but you know, we got protocol for that. Like, versus stepping outside of that bubble, and I'm not knocking on Florida, so sorry, Florida, but like stepping outside of that bubble and going to like even any of like the Asian countries and stuff that I went to, but I was in like China or, you know, where it's like densely populated, if you're in India or something like that, where that density of people might freak you out and you'll be like, oh, well, something's going to happen because there's lots of people. Well, that doesn't, those two don't correlate. It's just what you think in your brain and how they match, and that you breed your own fear. Like, no one, unless someone's like thrown you up against a wall or something and mugged you in a city, I don't know what you necessarily have to fear if you're just being like aware and cognizant, right? So you don't want to go into places you're traveling leading with the bias that either you formed from media or from anything other than like personal experience. I think even the experience of like a friend is not still your same experience. Like that could be situational. So it's like taking that and going, okay, I'll be aware of that. Cause like, good to know. Thanks a lot. But not going, oh my gosh, I'm going to be afraid of every single person because of what happened to you. That's a poor way to lead your life.
Oh, that's such a good point. There was actually a couple that I met that going back to Cape Town, the minute they landed, like as soon as they got off the plane, they got to their hotel in the downtown area and got jumped. And I think the next day something happened too. And so their experience was like, holy shit, this is the most unsafe place ever. We can't travel here. But what's interesting is I remember when I did the immersion class with Remote Year, they were like, do not go downtown. Like the city center is not where you go. That is where criminals hang out. That is like more poverty, da, da, da. And what's interesting is that's where they stayed. So it's like when you were saying earlier, like you really need to do your research and trust your intuition. Sometimes it takes a little bit more when you're going to a country to look into it and be like, okay, maybe I do need to go with a group like Remote Year, or maybe I need to go with someone. But if I were to just look at that couple and hear that story, I would probably never go to Cape Town. I'd be like, absolutely not. But because I did it in a different way, it's like my experience is different. And what's interesting is that couple said, thank God we ended up meeting other people that had different experiences because then it changed our perception. And I was so happy to hear that because I thought they were going to be like, Cape Town sucks, don't ever go there. And they ended up having like the time of their lives, but that experience itself really could have marred the whole thing without, if they weren't open to changing their perception, I think they would have had a really shitty time.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I think it all just comes back down to like, you can choose to go in with your bias when you're traveling somewhere, because we all have one, right? Like we've never experienced another place. So we have a interpretation or expectation of what it's going to be like. The more you can do to remove that and go, even if it is you're getting jumped, like I'm not saying that's a good thing to happen, but like going in with a more open slate to be like, this place, you show me what you're about, rather than me coming and going, well, I think it's going to be like X. So, I mean, this comes down to just expectations and enjoyment of a place as well. But for sure, for the safety thing, like, do your research. Don't be naive. Don't be dumb is like my favorite things that I just remind myself when I'm going places. Don't go down that street. It's a pretty bad idea right now at 9 p.m. Don't be dumb. Take a friend. Like, you still need to be, you're not like Super Mario with the star on when you walk everywhere. So be smart, but don't judge a place before you've experienced it or through someone else's experience, because it's not yours. And it's usually under a bias of theirs as well.
Oh, totally agree. What about some safety tips? Because something for me is like, I don't want to be that person that's traveling that's so overprotective. That's like, oh my God, we can't go here. No, nope, not there. No, no, no. The app said this. But I also don't want to be like, I remember going to a place once in Mexico City and people were like, wait, what? Like you went to that market that is so unsafe and dangerous. I even remember the Uber when we got out was like, you girls like really shouldn't be going here. But he was speaking in Spanish. And I thought he was just saying like, oh, be careful, you know, hold your purse close to you. And my friend later was like, he was very much warning us, like, do not go there. And then she told a guy she was seeing that we went there later that night. And he was like, are you guys out of your mind? Like, I can't believe you went to that market. So what do you do to prep yourself and stay safe before you go to a new location?
Just with that story alone, I think it's funny because I think that there is a piece of like innocence and naivety when you go somewhere that almost like, I'm not recommending this as advice, but like it almost protects you in a way. Like you get like a one chance pass with like being stupid and be like, oh, I don't know how we slipped through that one. I don't think that's going to work for you every time, but I've had similar situations like that where it's like, why were you over there? And like, how are you okay? in preparation for going places, I think, okay, for somewhere like El Salvador, that's where I went like really tactical with it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to look up like the whatever is on Canada website about countries like travel advisories or whatever. And just like, what about it? Cause people were like, oh, it's unsafe. And I'm like, that's a pretty broad stroke to paint. Like in what way? And it's like gang violence in central San Salvador. I'm like, fantastic. We're not going there. Private driver. Like we're good. I think that this is going to be with a sideline of like from a woman's perspective. Cause I think it's a very different, like this is a different conversation, and not saying that there aren't risks for men out there, but a very different conversation, especially solo travel. I think with guys, it's like, they just want your stuff. Like they'd want your money or something, that they don't want anything else from you. They want everything from us. So I think I've only ever had one time where I took a precaution, which is funny because nothing even happened, but I was, and it's like a lovely place to go. I was in Japan, and I don't know why, it was like one of those little voice moments of, I was lost in Hiroshima at like 10 p.m. after going out for dinner by myself. And then my phone, like my Jeep, I had about 2% left on my phone. So like, and I think it died. So I didn't actually have the map to get back to where I was supposed to go. And I'm just like walking around, and it's like, I'm starting to hit streets that don't have street lights anymore, or like street lamps. And for whatever reason, and I did this unconsciously, but like, you can open drink in Japan. And I had like a Smirnoff Ice for whatever reason from like the 7-Eleven, and I had drank it. And this was an unconscious thing, but like, as I got into a place that was a bit more like dark, and I'm like, okay, like spidey senses be on your guard, that we are all taught since like what, the age of 4, I flipped my bottle over. And I walked home with the bottle like flipped over. And I didn't realize I did that till I got home. But that was kind of weird for me, because it's like, I don't know a Japanese person's gonna like jump you. No, none of them. They're lovely. But sort of one of those moments. But yeah, sorry, back to your original question. I think honestly, just classic stuff. Like, I'm always aware of my surroundings. So it's unfortunately you have to do that. But like, don't be like headphones in your own world, super, like, don't put yourself in a situation where if you wrote it as a comic book, is there going to be a villain that's going to jump out? Like, assess your situation like that. And, you know, don't over-exaggerate it. Like, if it's not like that, don't scare yourself or anything like that. But if you kind of add the pieces together of like, okay, cool, I'm alone, I'm in X area, it's this time of night, you're doing math. And if those things like add up to, this is probably not great, change one of the factors. So find a friend, be in light, like get in a taxi, get in transit, like change one of the factors so it doesn't add up to the bad situation. Knowing where you are, to me, I think is one of the best things, because like, I'm a pretty aware person, especially when I'm traveling. So like, I know directions, I know. And so if you're not savvy that way, then make sure you have a phone with maps on it. But knowing where you are, I think, is really helpful, because even if something like were to happen, or you're like, oh, I need to like get out of X place quicker, I always sort of like know where to go, or where to go find somebody else that could be helpful, etc. So you just don't want to be in a place where you're like, holy crap, where am I? And I don't know, I don't have a tool, like I don't have a way to be safer or to change the situation.
I love those. I think it's what I said earlier too, is like, oh, I don't want to be the girl that's like overly protective, but I also don't want anyone to feel like bad if they are that person, because I would rather be safe than sorry, right? So if you are the person that has like, I don't know, this certain type of app and the whistle and the pepper spray and this and that, it's like, that's also okay, because those things have saved people's lives, right? There have been instances where someone's like, thank God I randomly had the pepper spray on me, or I just ended up taking a cab even though it was only 3 blocks away, it was midnight and I knew not to walk home. And you know, in those moments, sometimes, especially when you're with friends, I've been in that situation where you're just like, oh my God, it's 3 blocks away, who cares? But it's like, those are the moments sometimes. It's like you've had one too many drinks, it's pitch black, there's no streetlights. Those 3 blocks could change your life. And so it's okay if you want to take the $10 Uber and maybe in the moment feels silly, but thank God you got home safe.
Yeah, like listen to your gut is literally like, especially a woman, that is your best like just thermometer of what's going on. That like, that always listen to it, especially in that situation where you're like, it's 3 fucking blocks, because logic is telling you it's 3 fucking blocks, but something started the idea for us of like, hey, I should probably take an Uber. And your brain then went, why the hell would you do that? That's stupid. You could just walk. Listen to the other thing. And as you were talking about that, just with like friends, the other thing that came up for me was just also listen to it with the people that you're around, especially as a solo traveler, because it can be your friends that you're around, or like friends of friends, right? And you're like, okay, everyone's like kosher, whatever. But I've had situations where not like anything bad was going to happen, but I'm like, I, for some reason, just where this conversation is going, don't have the right feeling from you. And you, instead of like placating, if it's an event or a party or people around, instead of placating like what's going on there, or like making that other person feel comfortable, which I'm sorry, I think we do all the time, listen to that and be like, I'm going to go home now. Or like, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and just like get away from whatever is ever giving you the feeling of like, it's prickly. And that can be people.
Yeah. Sometimes they can really be people. And the gut thing is so true. I always remember this quote was like, your body doesn't know how to lie, right? Our brain knows how to lie. We know how to make things seem different than they are. We know how to fabricate ideas. your body doesn't have that capability because it doesn't like speak English. You know what I mean? It speaks the language of the body and it speaks the language of the nervous system of how you get activated, your fight or flight mode. So if you're getting that little spidey sense, or even if it's just like a little ping of anxiety and you're just like, this is weird. I'm just with my friends. We're at a bar. I just need to turn the corner. If there's that little butterfly in your stomach, just get the Uber. Just share your location on Uber, right? Share your location with people. That's something I will say too, that when I started traveling in groups really helped, is I would share my location with people like on the iPhone. So that when we went out, I mean, you know, when you go to Europe or South America, you go out until like 6 a.m. So this isn't like, woo, wrapping it up, last call at 1:30 a.m. This is like, we're going to go hard. We're going to go out to 1:30 a.m. We might end up skinny dipping at the beach. And we need to know where everyone is. So a lot of people have my location now. You can do this on WhatsApp. You can share it for like an hour to 8 hours to indefinitely. If you have an iPhone, you can do the Find My iPhone, like Find My Friends thing. So that's a tip from me, is like a lot of people do have my location. And if you're going on dates abroad,
yeah,
share your location. That's something my friends and I always did. It was like, hey, I'm going on a date. I'm going to share my location with you for like the next 8 hours. And again, I'd rather be safe than sorry and pretend like, oh my God, it's fine. We met on Hinge. He looks like a good guy. It's like, you never know.
You never know. Well, I was going to ask you that, like, because you have traveled to a lot more places in for like spurts of time. So I'm wondering that kind of situation where like someone who either you're on a date with or like is like friends or friend of friend, like someone who you're like, oh, you're at meeting at the outset, like you're cool, like you're a good person. Have you ever had it where it flips for you and you're like, I don't get the good vibes from you and I have to extract?
Yeah. I mean, in the moment, it's one of those things, like you said, in hindsight that I realized, like there was a guy I met in Australia and he was super hot, super tall. Like all my friends and I were like, who is that guy? He's so hot. And then we started talking to him and he had like, he was kind of off. Like he kind of like put my friends down and like, wasn't that friendly or welcoming, but we were just so like young and like, oh my God, he's a hot Australian and he's 6'6". You know, you're just like dumb and like, oh my God, a foreign guy. And then we went to a party with him. And I remember he was being like way too touchy and feely for like the amount of time we had spent together. I was like, we really just met 30 minutes to 45 minutes ago. And he's already like wrapping his arm around my waist and acting like we're like already together. And we're like, it's a definite hookup. And I remember just feeling like this is weird. And I couldn't tell. This is when I just didn't trust myself and had no connection with my body, where I was like, am I just nervous around him? Or is this just, you know, is this just like a weird feeling that this guy isn't good for me? Long story short, we ended up hooking up. And I remember when we hooked up, I was like, I need to get out of here. Like, I don't want to be in this situation. And it feels like if I don't get out of here soon and like spend the night or like stay longer than I should, like, something weird just going to happen. And so I remember being like, I want to go back to the beach, like with all our friends, where all our friends were. And we went there. And funny enough, he ended up like talking to another girl as soon as we got there. And I just remember being like, I'm getting far away from this guy. Like, I'm not going to sit here and compete for his attention. I'm not going to like play whatever little game he's playing. And to this day, looking back, I'm like, you aren't nervous about him being hot. You were getting a massive signal to like get the fuck away from that guy. And to be honest, it's something I really regret that I didn't listen to my body, because the whole experience was unenjoyable. I was honestly like scared half the time. And I just feel like it was a moment that I learned to like never betray my body signals again.
And hopefully like that's not the thing that needs to happen for like us to realize that. But sometimes we do to then go, okay, that's like, that is what my intuition feels like. That's what it feels like in my body. Like, never ignoring that now.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is I remember leaving that experience and being so upset with myself that we even hooked up, and promising myself, like, I'm never going to let that happen again. Like, I am going to make sure that the next time I talk to someone, I'm very like discerning and take more into account how my body feels. And the next weekend is when I met my German ex. So I feel like that was such a good like signal from the universe of like, okay, you kind of made this declaration to yourself and you promised yourself like you're going to be more discerning. And that's when I met him. And I did not immediately think like, oh my God, let me just jump right into this. Like, I mean, we kind of did. We jumped right into it. It is a much different feeling in my body. And I think that showed it was not that far apart, that like, again, the body does not lie. So very interesting lesson. What about you? Does anything come to mind, whether that's a person or a place that you were like, whoa, spidey senses are going off?
Yeah, not in that way of like getting into that stage with anybody, but definitely like I'm very naive as a person in general, like literally my whole life going through school and stuff. Like I'd be at bars with my friends in university and they'd be like, yo, that person's like, check you out. I'd be like, where? Like absolute zero awareness in that regard, which is funny because I'm a pretty aware person otherwise. So I think that in traveling for me, it's like, yeah, definitely when I've been solo, conversations never were. I'm a really defensive person as well. So I'm like very good at blocking. So I won't lean into like, let's like be flirty and all that stuff. Like if I find you off, I will start being off so that I like repel you. So I was at an event like a little while ago, last month, and like nothing was wrong with this person either. It's just like alcohol is involved. I'm pretty sober and people's confidence levels go up. And so it just in terms of stuff said and like kind of like, this isn't a hookup way, but like invitations of like, hey, we come dance or like come outside or whatever. I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm just washing dishes. Like, leave me here. I'm going to wash dishes. And like, I'll go really like flat. And because if you stop playing into it anymore, the other person doesn't know what to do because they're trying to like be in this kind of vibe in this zone. And if you're like really the opposite of like this weird duck, like you just cut that right off. And obviously you have to have a bit of soberness probably to do that. So if you're not in that state, it's going to be harder to do. But like, if you change the energy, I think is my point. So if you're not on like their kind of level of energy anymore, and you're like very drastically different in another one, it kind of stops in its tracks. So that's what I found to be the best. I don't really care if it makes me seem like a bit of standoffish or weird, because I'm just like, yep, we're not on the same energy, like go away. And that has seemed to work for the most part. But I also never like put myself into situations where that can be taken advantage of, because this could be to a detriment as well, but like I'm pretty commanding when I'm in a space or I'm in a room or whatever like that. So not like the prey to, you know, have someone take advantage of, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, like, right, neither here nor there. But that's kind of the way I work through things, because if someone is going to actually make like a genuine relationship or whatever with me, they almost have to like surmount a little bit of that energy that I put off or put out from the outset. So yeah, that's my tea on that.
I love that. I think it's interesting because my mom would always, you know, she watches so much true crime and listens to all these podcasts and watches Dateline. And it's always about like women traveling, like, oh, they went on the guy's sailboat after hours and then they went missing, or they went to the rooftop and then all of a sudden she was never seen again.
Yeah.
And it's like, I do have some crazy stories like that. Right. But what's interesting is I tend to lean not flirty, and I don't like to participate in that stuff. So yeah. My friends are like, oh my god, they invited us back to their penthouse, or like, look, they have a boat on the water right there on the marina. I'm just like, no, like I would rather be in my bed cozy and safe with water and like waking up to our own Airbnb than like being stuck somewhere that we don't know. It's the middle of the night in a country we don't know, that our phones are gonna die. You know what I mean? It's just like a bad idea. And I'm like, there are some things that I'm sure I've like killed the vibe, or I'm not being the flirty fun friend, or could have had like a crazy story that I'm just like, there's some things that you feel into that you're like, this is not worth the energy. And to your point, like being a little icy sometimes shuts it down. And this happened in Mexico. These two guys were talking to my friend and I, and the guy was all over my friend, literally like kissing her arm, kissing her shoulder, like touching her. And I was looking at her like, do you want me to shut this down? Like, this is insane. And she was like, oh, it's fine, he's drunk. I'm like, but it's not fine. We find out he has like a wife and kids. I'm like, okay, this is like double not fine. And I was so icy cold. I was like, I'm ready to go home. Yeah, I'm done drinking. No, thanks. I don't want another drink. And you could just tell they were like, all right, well, like, bye. And I kept looking around like, we are not going out with these guys. Like, it's not happening. So I agree. Sometimes you like kind of have to be icy and give people the signal like, we're not doing this. You need to go away.
Yeah, sometimes you just, again, the gut feeling, and you're just like, yep, that we're done with that.
And I think it's because, to your point too, we've probably been in situations, I mean, I just told you one that I've ended up in, but I'm like, I can see where this is going, right? We're going to go to another bar. They're going to invite us back to their hotel room. They're going to try to whip out a few drinks. One of us is going to get too drunk. And we're going to be like, oh, well, let's just stay the night. And then it's going to end weird. I'm like, no, I've been down this road too many times. I can tell you how this story ends, and I don't like it. So I'm getting out of the story right now.
Yeah, it's literally like, think of it as like animals and bait, like the nice bow, if you have a genuine connection with this person, I'm not knocking any of that. But like, if you're there, like ask yourself if you're there for the glitter or like what's under it. Right. And all of that is just used as bait. So I'm like, I don't want to be bait, or I don't want to be baited.
What about crazy travel stories, though? Because you know, we're talking about safety, listening to your gut, and like, you know, being icy to people sometimes and not being the biggest flirt in the room. But there's been some times where I'm like, wow, I actually did end up at the crazy after party and I did end up here, but it turned out great and fine. And now I have good friends in these places, or I ended up talking to the guy, or whatever the case is. You have stories like that where it could have been dangerous on the surface, but looking back, you're like, but it worked out.
I don't know that I have any that I'm like, they could have been dangerous. You know, I often think about, so I have a lot that I'm like, okay, thank goodness I did that, because like my intuition was like telling me to do that. And it's sort of this borderline between like intuition and recklessness that like you oscillate with when you travel. And what I mean by that is like, sometimes you'll get a hit of an idea, or not even like a hit of an idea, but like someone is physically presenting an idea to you and you're like, oh, that seems sweet. Like you get in like travel mode. And I think we've talked about this before on my podcast, but like where everything starts to not look so freaky to you anymore, like the world just sort of opens up in terms of, oh, this is all possible. And your thermostat for what you would have thought with your like at home westernized brain of like, don't do that, that seems crazy, is like, no, that's actually fine. So you get in this middle ground. It's almost like a scale. Like your home brain is like afraid of everything. Your middle brain, your travel mode brain is like, okay, we're open to a lot more shit, but also at the same time, like, don't be dumb. Like there's still definitely reckless decisions to be made. And then there's like the far off land of like reckless, some shit's going to go down. And so you just like, don't want to bridge the gap over to the reckless shit's going to go down. But in that sort of space where you're a lot more comfortable with kind of whatever can happen, I find that opportunities will arise that I would get the idea of, or I'd get the response of like, yeah, go do that. And sometimes that would be really spontaneous. And so I'd almost have to check in sometimes with that intuition, and not in a like judgy way of, no, what, like, gut, what are you telling me? But like, really? Like, that's what we're going to do here? Okay, I'm kind of freaked out by it, but like, I guess we're going to do that. And it's sort of like pressure testing that spontaneity or that recklessness to go, okay, I can be a little bit more free and liberal and whatever with how I'm going to be, but not losing sight of and not jumping all the way over to into reckless shit's going to happen land, and go, is this safe? And, you know, am I around other people? Am I going, like, do the math again. Do you have all these factors adding up to something bad is going to happen? Or is it just, this is outside of my comfort zone, but like, you know, I am with people that I know. Okay, that's fine. We have one factor plus, okay, it's in a location that I know. Okay, equals, yeah, a little bit spontaneous. Don't know these people. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to hug up with someone. We'll see. But like, I'm not going to be in this position where I'm not okay. And so I think adding up those like factors when you are considering like those kind of intuitive, spontaneous sort of decisions is what keeps you comfortable with it, but also like smart and safe.
Oh my God, I love what you said. Like, do the math, right? It's almost like trying to have 3 out of 5 things. Like,
yeah.
Location, your phone fully charged, data and services working, you know, the emergency hotline, you know, someone has your location. It's like, you need to have majority of those things at least up and running and working. Be sober, right? Like, yeah, something along those lines. But if you don't have data and you're in the middle of a desert and you're drunk as fuck and no one's with you and you don't know these people, it's like, that's bad math. So do not end up in that situation. It makes me think of actually a story in Malta. I remember, it's so funny, I just called my mom at like 3 a.m. and I'm at this guy's house with 3 other guys in the frame. And we're like, they all spoke Spanish. And they're like, hola, mama. You could just see my mom like, what the hell is my daughter doing at 3 a.m? Like, I don't know any of these guys. I've never seen them. What is going on? And I'm like, wait, actually, it is pretty crazy when you back out what happened is, I went to this pool. I went to Malta by myself. Mm-hmm. I get there and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to be that girl on TikTok, like, do it for the plot. You know, like that person that's just like, we're going to do everything for the plot. I get on Hinge. I match with the guy and I'm like, what's going on tonight in Malta? Like, what are fun things to do? And he's like, actually, there's this huge pool party at this like hotel. It's really big. You should come. So I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to go. The worst thing that happens is we're at a huge pool party in public. And if I don't like him, I can literally just leave. And if I like him, we can hit it off and stay there. I end up seeing him come through and I'm like, oh my God, he's way shorter than I thought. He doesn't really look like his photos. He's like with a group of people and I maybe thought he was going to be with one or two. And I'm like, this is like going off intuition again. I was kind of like, this is just giving me vibes. And then his texts were kind of like, he was being kind of like neggy, you know, where he's like, oh, like you're cute enough for like an American or something, like things like that. And so things like, it just started feeling off. Like the senses were going like, no, no, no. So then I just found this random, like motley crew of people hanging out in the corner of the pool. And they all had just met each other. And one was like, actually two people were coworkers. One was a random guy that was visiting from like Holland. Another one is from Colombia. It was just, again, this like really fun, silly crew that we were just dancing and vibing. And I met this gay guy and he's like, hey, I'm going to go into the crowd. My friend is dancing on stage and my friends are in there. And he was like this older, like, you know, very fabulous gay guy that just loved dancing. And I'm like, okay, let's go. And his friend was one of the dancers on stage. Oh, we meet his other friend who was super cute, find out this friend is straight. And I'm like, oh, is your friend straight? And he's like, yeah, do you want me to hook you up with him? And I'm just feeling the vibes all night. And I remember being like, okay, don't get too drunk. Like, feel this out. Like, does this guy seem like a good guy? Are his friends and him genuinely having fun? Or are they trying to like, I've also met groups of guys you can tell are just on the hunt, right? That they're like, we're going to get girls to come home with us tonight. Like, I'm like, okay, is that the vibe I'm getting? And by the way, majority of his friends were gay. So I was like, they're not going to get any girls to go home with them. But essentially, I just listened to my intuition. I shared my location with friends. The guy even helped me, like one of the gay guys and the straight guy were like, oh, if your phone's dying, like, here's my charger. If you want to use it, why don't you write your address in here so we can get you a cab as soon as you get there? And I was like, okay, they're not. Here's the thing that I want to call out is they weren't pushing me to do something I didn't want to do. They weren't like, come home with us. Who cares? It's going to be a party. Who cares if your phone dies? They're like, what do you need? Like, let's get your address. Let's get make sure you get home. And I'm like, okay, that made me feel like this isn't a ploy to like get me in their house. And so essentially, yeah, I went to their house. We had a super fun time, had an after party, hooked up with that guy, called my mom while I was at that after party. It ended up being fine. Like that guy and I still follow each other on Instagram, him and his friends, all of us stay in touch. And I think that was a good lesson in the mathed out. And I was not completely blackout drunk. And I listened to my intuition and senses throughout the night to be like, this doesn't feel off. If I felt any little like inkling, I don't think I would have gone.
Yeah. And it's just getting more and more in tune with that. And like, that's why I said at the beginning, it's not even just like a skill, it's practice. Like, it's practice and going from the first example that you gave, right? The first story in Australia to that going, oh, I know what that feels like now. I know like where to turn. And that situation I think is awesome. No, not like awesome how it started, but like awesome as an example of just also like, not like rejection is redirection, but that sort of like that aspect of, I've had a lot of experiences where what you set out to do or whatever you set out to even plan during traveling is like, it didn't work. And it's like, thank God that didn't work because I had a better experience, which was X, and with like better people. It's like the people that you met because you met shitty people first who led you to them. And I think some of those are like very cool things that happen, again, by being open. Like, you got to be open to stuff not working out and stuff being like, well, that was crap. Like, that's not a good situation. And sometimes it'll be a bust day or evening or trip or something. But sometimes it'll actually be really cool because it'll lead you to the next thing. You just have to like, push through that phase of it sucking.
Yeah, that's so true. I think travel automatically gives you this abundance mindset of like, yeah, it didn't work out with the guy I matched with on Hinge. But like, thank God it led me to all these other really cool groups of people. But I don't know that I would have had that mindset had I not traveled so much. So I do totally agree. So one thing that fascinates me about travelers is taking care of their health, because it is such an exhausting activity. Like, you are constantly changing climates, elevation, temperatures, like everything. And it just starts to really, it's a lot of wear and tear on the body. And something that fascinates me about you and your story is your cancer journey. Can you open up about that and tell us, when were you diagnosed with cancer?
Yeah. So I was diagnosed with cancer. I had papillary thyroid cancer. Whoa. So AKA, that just means like my whole thyroid was toast essentially. And so I have like a whole, I had my whole neck basically done and had my whole thyroid cut out and like over 115 lymph nodes throughout my whole left side of my head. And so, but I didn't know about that until I came back. So I say came back. I did this whole period of travel because I was doing my last semester of university over in Singapore. So I did Asia for like 7 months, essentially, because I was over in Singapore. And then I did like all of Asia. I think the only places I didn't go were Laos, the Philippines, and Korea. So I pretty much went everywhere else. And that was awesome. I definitely resonate with like taking care of your health is hard. I found it very difficult to eat there because I'm sensitive to a lot of stuff. And yeah, probably picked up stomach bugs that I'm still dealing with today from there. So it absolutely does take a toll on your body and you do have to take care of it. Not that I could have done anything about the cancer piece. Still don't know. I mean, I think there's lots of reasons why they try and track why that happens, but in this case, like none. So lack of a better term, shit happens. And so basically I came back in 2018 of July. So I was gone from January 2018 to July 2018 and was home for like a couple of months. And then basically I just had like this giant, what would be like a cyst on like the side of, or if it was a cyst, that would have been nice, but on the side of my neck. And like, I'm very like phobia it by my neck for whatever reason, like collarbones, anything to do with veins. So this was like the worst possible situation, like people touching and poking and doing everything to my neck. So I noticed it when I was on a hike and it was like 4 centimeters across. So I don't know what that is. And like an inch and a half, almost 2 inches. So I noticed that and then went to get that checked. And that was in October. So did testing on it. They literally just told me like, oh, it's probably just assessed, and did a biopsy, and they were then biopsied like my thyroid, everything. And I don't even think that he needed to actually send the biopsy in. I think he took the sample and was like, okay, because it was like that bad. So I had a total thyroidectomy and like all of my lymph nodes in December. I had to do like a radiation thing in the spring, and then I had to do the surgery again in the June after, so like 6 months after, because sometimes you don't get all the cells. And so if you don't, and they're hiding, or they're microscopic and they're hiding, then they have a party and then you have to do like take it more. So did 2 bouts of that, and yeah, that's, I haven't had to do any more, so that's good.
Are you completely cancer free now?
I mean, like, yeah, I think so. Like you they're always monitoring for stuff, and I think that goes for any like prior cancer patients. So they're just, they track kind of certain markers depending on what cancer you had, but haven't had to do anything more along that line since then. And it's one of those things where, and I don't wish for it. You know, when like kids and stuff talk about like, oh, I think I'm going to, this is going to sound really morbid, but like, I'm sure you've had this conversation where you're like, oh, I think I'm going to like die early or something. You just have to have like the sense of, you don't want that, but you're like, I feel like that might be what my life is like. Not saying that that's what I think, but I think there's always an aspect of like having cancer where you're like, oh no, that I very much accept the very real reality that I might have a different type of it someday, or probably will have a different type of it someday. And I think one of the greatest things there, I mean, there's so many things I could say that having that experience gave me and taught me, but like coming right off of that year that I had, or I say year because it felt like that, but like half a year that I had when I was over in Asia, it was like the thing that I needed almost. And this is going to sound like ridiculous, but It coupled with so many of the lessons and experiences that I had just had while traveling of like, this is who I enjoy being. Like, this is me in my fullest and highest state when I, you know, was out there in Asia. And it's like, still to this day, the very high highs of what I had experienced traveling and the very low lows of what I had to deal with at the end of that year going into then into 2019, I always tell people, oh, they're like, what's the best year of your life? I'll say 2018. And I think that it's such a like yin yang of that is what life is like. And you have to accept both what is really light and what is also dark and realize they both have a purpose and a purpose to teach you something. And so I'm not sitting here going, oh, I wish that kind of experience on anybody. I don't wish for any injury on anybody, right? But like, it is what it is. And you have that experience for a reason. And what I had like about a day where I was really upset about it. Well, I wasn't even really upset about it, but just like at a loss sort of it. Cause I was 23 at the time. And I was like, I take very good care of my body. Like what the hell? And so, and I went to a lot of my appointments myself, not because like my parents don't want to come. It was closer to work. So I just go to them myself, not knowing that they were going to lead to like that kind of like diagnosis. So when I actually went for, and got like my biopsies done, and when I got told or whatever, I was by myself. And I remember like actually, it was the time when they told me I had to have the surgery again. And I was like so pissed off because I had just healed. And I remember there's a courtyard at my surgeon's office. And I just like went and sat outside and on this bench. And I like cried for like 30 minutes because I was like, I just did this. Why do I have to do it again? And I had like an initial kind of conversation with God back when it first happened and sort of going like, why? But not even why, because it doesn't matter. But like, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do with this? Like, how am I supposed to work with this? And you can call it source, you can call it spirit, you can whatever. For me, that's God. And the message I had, and it was like, not from my own brain. That was a very like, it's sentence from someone else was, it's going to be fine. I've got this. So you don't have to try and manage it. And that alone, like I freed me up. After that, I didn't worry about the surgery I had to do. I didn't worry about the radiation I didn't have to do. Like everyone kept asking me afterwards, like, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Cause I wasn't like sitting in a puddle of tears about it or whatever. And I was almost pissed off by that. I'm like, yes, there is no alternative. Right. So when you have an experience like that, where your only actual way is forward, you can choose to resist that path, or you can choose to surrender to that path. And that parallels a lot of things, I think, for me, what happened in traveling as well. Like sometimes just shit is out of your control and you can just work with it and go, okay, so what is this going to lead to instead? Or how is this working for me? And instead of how is this happening to me? And it's a difficult perspective, I think, for some people to understand, to have in this sort of situation. But for me, I'm so grateful for the experience, because coming out of a year where I had experienced so much and then that happened, I was like, they happen for a reason at the same time, because to me, it was a reflection of that's how you're supposed to live, Melissa. Like that state of who you are, like the ideas that you were generating, the people you were collaborating with, that version of you is who you're supposed to be. And you're not promised, like almost in a morbid way, but like, you're not promised anything. You don't deserve a life, or you don't just get to have a life where you live to 95. That's not guaranteed. Sorry, it's not deserving, but you're not guaranteed that. And so if you walk forward throughout your life, assuming that happens, you're going to wake up to a really real reality one day where for a lot of people, it doesn't. There's a car crash. There's a fill in the blank. But if you don't have that realization of like considering, I think, mortality in a way that makes you have gratitude for life, not in a way that makes you fear living, having that kind of reflection when you are younger is so powerful, because it gives you intention for how you live your life. And it gives you intention for like examining and not just being complacent with the days that you're living. And you don't have to do 100 things in a day. It's not about productivity, but about intention of how you want to live and what you live for. And so for me, that really was a catalyst for reflecting on like, what is my purpose? Like, what is my calling here to do? If I was given this reminder from God now at 23 of, your life might be finite, whether it's to 90 or whether it's to 40 or whether it's to 28. I'm not saying what the finite is, but all of our lives are finite. And so I put you here for a reason. I put you in our school for a reason. Do something with it. And that doesn't mean change the world. And it doesn't have to be like heroism to the max, right? We don't need to be president in the United States. But like, what is it that you are given? And I'm speaking as God, but like, what is it that I gave you? What gifts, talents, abilities do you have? What is this calling that you have? And are you going to take it up and do something with it? And so for me, that really solidified something I was always passionate about, which was like, what is the meaning and kind of calling for our lives? And how do we each like live into that more rather than the false kind of assignment we get from society of what we should do instead? And how do we come back to be more true to understanding what it is for each of us that we really are here to do and how we're meant to have impact in the world, and then actually doing it, like putting boots on it and making it walk and living a life where I kind of feel the state that I felt when I was traveling in that way before, when I was through Asia, and just being in that highest version of you. So to me, like the experiences together were, that's why I say it was the best year of my life in 2018, because it was some of the greatest lessons I had in that guide me for the rest of my life now.
Wow. I have chills, because what you were saying about looking at things almost from your deathbed, to be honest, of like, what am I going to regret on my deathbed not doing, or what am I going to look back and have so much gratitude that I did do it? Like, literally putting yourself in that mentality will help you see, to your point, that life is finite. We're not guaranteed to live 100 years. Like, we have no idea how long we're going to live. I could literally close this laptop and walk outside right now and get hit by a bus. Like, that's not going to happen, but things like that happen all the time, right? Like, my friend's dad just passed away yesterday and it was out of nowhere. And my friend had another friend pass away. Like, you just never know what's going to happen. And it reminds me of a quote that one of my mentors said, and it was something along the lines, I'm going to butcher it a little bit, but it's something along the lines of like, the reason you're awake today is because God's not done with you. Mm-hmm. And that has always shook me, because it's like, you were just given another full day, another full sunset, sunrise, breath, sight. You know, if you have your five senses, like, that is such a gift. So I feel like for anyone listening that's maybe just feeling like down, or like they're not where they're at with their business, or they're not traveling, or they don't have love, or their health isn't where they want to be, just look at the fact that you are alive today and that you have your five senses, that you can go out and look at the sky and put your feet on the ground and touch things and have the human range of emotion. And I think that's really underrated in a world that idolizes work and hustle and money and status, to be just alive and like enjoying your life and grateful for just the things that are around you. It's just such a good reminder. And I just want to thank you so much for sharing that story.
Yeah, of course. Like, I think the way that I practice that now, you know, our world talks so much about like having a gratitude practice and all that right now, which I love. Like, yes, please do that. But if you struggle with going, okay, how is that going to impact me? Like, for those that you're just talking to there of like, I don't see the value in the day, like in the present moment or anything like that, actually coming back to your senses is really powerful. Or almost going, not to worst case scenario, but like, if you didn't have X, like, I had an issue over Christmas last year where like I didn't have hearing in both my ears because they were both like infected. And so, but like, that made me just actually really like think about, because the sense for me that I would like, if you know, you rank them or whatever, for me, it would be hearing, because like, music to me is like a universal language. And so now when I listen to music, I'm like so grateful every time I like hear good music, and I almost like sit in it and like ooze into, oh, this is awesome. Because I've had an experience where I'm almost like, oh, I can imagine what it's like to not have that. And so if you can imagine what it's like to not have your sight, or not be able to touch things, not be able to walk and like run. And so every time you run, it's almost like, you know, a meditation and a gratitude of like, to body of like, I can run, I can walk, like I can use my voice. What, like, and those people can't. So you have to almost, if you struggle with it, it's almost thinking of like, if I didn't have these things, how would my life change? And that gives you instant gratitude. And the reason that gratitude is just such a powerful thing is because it's the idea of pulling you into your present. And bringing this back to kind of the story I just shared, I do that all the time with everything, like with people around me that are laughing at a table. And I'm like, I get to be here today and I get to hear them laugh. Like, I was with all my family at a cottage in Idaho this last week, and like just watching people screw around and push each other in a lake. And I'm like, I get this day, I get this moment with them, I get this sunset with them. Cause like, yeah, I don't know if I do get more and more and more of them. And so it's looking at and considering mortality with a sense of gratitude rather than a sense of fear. And if you can conceptualize that for yourself and sort of make a pivot in how you've always thought about, like, not just live every day like it's your last. That's like a little, there's no body to that. Like, we don't feel anything when we think about that. But thinking about it from that perspective of like, when I think of my mortality and think of like the life that I get to live, that it might be finite, and then it's not promised to me, and I'm not guaranteed, and I'm not special. You are special, you're a special human, but like, you're not special, then how are you going to then live out the days that you do get? And what are you going to do with them?
Oh, it reminds me, I love what you said about if you didn't have it, because it's something that's helped me recently. I feel like I've been going on this like body image journey where I'm like, oh, I wish my legs were thinner, and I wish I had sculpted arms, and da da da. And I'm like, let's just imagine right now that God was like, if you're going to complain so much, then I'm just going to take them away. You know, okay, you don't want to use your legs. Okay, then something's going to happen and you're going to get paralyzed and you're not going to be able to walk. Or like, you're going to have your arms amputated, or your voice is going to stop working. Like, something weird. I'm like, that would be terrified. I would be so upset with myself that I didn't appreciate my body for how it runs. And it sounds like that's a very similar concept you're talking about here, is like just appreciating what it's doing for you now instead of, I wish I had this. I wish I was better. I wish I could improve. I wish. It's like, if you look at the masterpiece you are right now and just the world you created for yourself or that you're in, that is good enough. And it's okay what you said too, to not be heroic. I think that's something there's in North America and like our, in general, it's like everything, you have to be the hero and the best and number one. And I remember I had someone on my podcast that's like, your purpose could just be that you smile at people on the sidewalk every day and you're going to help people. You know, when you're having a bad day and someone just smiles at you, like, how are you doing? Or like, are you okay? And imagine if that person never asked and you're like, wow, that totally made my day. Like, you could be that person for someone else. You don't always need to be the number one thing at your job or making $100,000 a month. It's like literally just giving one compliment a day to people could be your life purpose. And that is okay.
Yeah. I've said so many times, and I use my grandparents as an example because I think it's just easy. But like, you know, if I look at my grandfather and I go like, what is his purpose? It's not his careers. Like, he's done multiple. He's like 85. And if I boil it down, I'm like, I think his purpose was like to just love his family, like to love people really well and just like build a really like loving family, because he's done that. And for other people, their purpose might be to have an effect on climate change or something. But maybe that's Greta Thunberg's, right? Like, some might be big scale, but it doesn't have to be for fame, I think, is the thing with that people, as you say, I think it's a more Western thing. I always come back to like, my life has to have some huge ulterior grand scale effect on everybody. And it can. I'm not saying it can't, but it doesn't have to be. And we put so much pressure on like figuring out what's my purpose. Like, I was just working with a client, and we literally, like, she'd struggled with this for so long, and it boiled down to like her purpose was in the things that she loved, which was connection and support and like celebration of like others. And that, and I was like, you can do, your purpose is it might be a singular thing. And my belief is that like that is a mixture and understanding of the gifts and talents you're given with what you love. If you've ever heard of Ikigai, it's like the Japanese kind of philosophy of like what you love, what you're good at, what the world needs, what you can be paid for, whatever, right? So like, I think that you have an innate thing and you can understand that how you want to, but the ways you can apply it, millions of them. If I take my client here and go, okay, yeah, her purpose is connection and support and celebration of others. How can you do that? You could do that in a medical profession. You could do that as a teacher. You could do that. You'd start your own company. You could do, there is endless amount of ways. So if you ever feel boxed in because you're like, oh, I don't believe in myself having a meaning or a higher purpose or a calling or anything, I think that's crazy, because that's a GPS for your life. If you're living without one, then you're going to come to a point where you're like, what's it all for? But you don't have to feel boxed in, I think, is the key thing. Like, take that as not a thing to give you boundaries, but a thing to actually give you freedom. It's like a trampoline, because if you understand that I have this reason for being here, and like, this is one, what lights me up and turns me on, but also what I was designed for, and I feel that in my core, that is a trampoline up to, now what do you want to do with it? Rather than boxing you in and going like, oh, you are a lawyer, that was your purpose. Your purpose is not a profession. Your purpose, God doesn't think about careers, right? He thinks about gifts and abilities and essence of like an embodiment of who you are. So if you've never had that perspective shift and think that it's something that it is hard for you to wrap your head around, think of it in that regard and how limitless it can make you. And yeah. And then you'll start having so much appreciation for all of the little things like that we are just talking about.
I feel like the theme here is like, you don't have to monetize your purpose.
Yeah.
That's going to be a hard thing for people to wrap their heads around, because a lot of us are taught what, you know, never work a day in your life if you love what you do and da da da. And like, I agree with that to some extent. But to your point, it's like, you can tie pieces of your purpose into your profession or your vocation or whatever it is. But to be hellbent on like, I have to have this one purpose and it has to be my life's career and I have to be the best at it, that's when people start to suffer internally and like, wow, I'm not good at this. I suck. Maybe I don't know my purpose. And we start to go in that existential spiral because we feel like we're doing it wrong. So how would you advise someone to either find their purpose or give them tools to understand what their purpose is?
Yeah, I think that my belief is that answer is inside of you already. And so it's a lot about like unpacking and uncovering pieces of your past and also what you desire for your future, and like doing that from a place of the subconscious and not doing it from a place of like shoulds, like the world has told me I should be or should do or whatever. And again, like when I work with a client, I'm usually trying to assess what their understanding of purpose is from the outset. So to the points you were just making, like is it someone who really associates it with career? Okay, we're gonna have to like extrapolate that understanding a little bit. Or is it someone who understands really that like purpose is a thing, a piece of you, like your name is a piece of you, and what you do with it is a choice. So I think primarily walking somebody back through the breadcrumbs of their life that have given them clues, but they haven't been able to see them because they haven't been looking for them. So what I mean by that is like, what were all the times that something lit up for you when you were small, when you, like, what would you secretly do, you know, for the rest of your life, like, or would want to slip away to do? All of those kind of questions that like pull back to where is your heart? Where does like your passion come from? And I say do, but it doesn't have to be doing. So again, for my client I was talking about here, and I'll just use her as an example because it's easy to, like, hers wasn't about, oh, making bracelets. Like, that's my purpose. It was about looking at all these situations from her past and her relationships in education, in, you know, her family and her friends, like the wheel of life of how we experience things, and where did she find joy, essentially. And looking through a lot of that, finding that, oh, it was when she was connecting with others, and it was celebrating people when people were celebrating her, like things bubble to the surface like oil on water. And so you do that through your past a little bit, but I also help clients do that by looking at their future and going, okay, what is it that you desire? If you go and write down, you know, everything that just like flows out of you at a true subconscious without judgment, and is from actually you want this, not someone told you to want it. I'm never going to look at your journal. This is for you. No one's going to judge you for it. What comes out there? And if you rank those things also too, of like, you want this in the near future, you want this maybe later, and maybe this is sometime in your life, what are the top priority things that come up for you? And then bringing kind of those together and sandwiching them in your present right now of like, how do those match up? Because what you desire is destined for you. And I have that belief of like, that's coming from a place of source and higher power and God as well, right? Like, you wouldn't have a desire to do something or be some or whatever if that also wasn't for a purpose. So it's kind of bringing those things together and mapping them a little bit. But the easiest way I can describe that is finding the breadcrumbs through your life that lead you to the understanding of, oh, this is what I always have been my whole life. And for me, that was pulling that back all the way till when I was like 4 and finding the actual definite moment of going, oh, this is what I think about all the time. Like, purpose and meaning and like how we find fulfillment is something I've thought about since I was literally a kid.
Oh my gosh, I love the idea of thinking about like, what would you secretly want to slip away and work on all day, or do all day, or be around all day, and using that to guide your insights. Because I think it's true that sometimes we don't even realize, like, why would this thing keep knocking at my door if it wasn't for me, right? Like, I don't think that's how our minds work. I don't think that's how bodies work. I don't think that's how creativities work. It's like, something that's meant for you is going to stay in your ether and your radar and part of your memory until it's either manifested or digested, processed, whatever the case is. And I think if you're someone that's hearing that like knock or little tink, tink, tink on the window, it's like, pay attention to that. That's not random. And it could lead you to maybe some bigger insights than you even realize.
Yeah. And the big thing that happens is like, that knock is always happening. And we are socialized to do something else, or, you know, pay attention to the TV instead of the window, the sound on the window. And so you just turn the volume up on the TV because you're like, well, I don't know what that, or like, you know, the sound in your car when it's kind of like tinkling and broken, or let's just turn the volume up. Like, we don't need to hear that. It's still there though. And when that TV stops pulsating you anymore and you go, what the hell's wrong with my life? Because this is boring me. Why am I here? I'm a couch potato. Sometimes people remember that there's a noise coming from behind them on the window, and they go, well, what the hell's that noise? And if you start paying attention to it, you're like, oh, fuck, well, that noise has been there for 30 years, and I've just been paying attention to the TV. But it takes a real shift to actually turn your body around and go like, okay, let me pay attention to this now instead. And some people don't want to do that because they're so used to what they've been looking at and what they've been investing with their time and energy and career and forever, to then go, oh, I'm 42 now, none of that ever fulfilled me. Am I ready to actually examine what does? But my advice or my response to that is like, it's never too late to live a life of your highest self and live a life that like you were designed to be. So don't fear doing that and don't fear going, well, I don't know what the answer is. And I don't, you know what the answer is with you. It takes time and it takes being uncomfortable with it a little bit, maybe, but the answer is with you. So it's never a lot, or it's never a matter of, I'm not going to find it or I'm not going to figure it out. You'll figure it out if you have the intention to.
I think it reminds me a lot of the sunk cost fallacy. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-mm.
It's basically it's like a distorted way of thinking that essentially when you invest so much time into something, you're like, well, I've already done this. I've already invested time, money, et cetera, so I can't back out now. A good example is like reading a bad book that you're like, okay, yeah, I know it's like on the bestseller list and I paid $20 for it, but I'm literally 75% of the way through and I still don't like it, but you're like, whatever, I'm going to finish it. Or you buy a concert ticket and the day comes and you're like sick with a cold and tired and, you know, your nose is stuffy and you're probably going to get everyone sick, but you're like, I already bought the concert ticket, I should go. And I think the sunk cost fallacy applies a lot to how people look at their life and their purpose is like, I've already invested this much time, I can't back out now, right? I already got the movie ticket. It's too late. I have to see the movie through. When in reality, that's like an intellectual conception. That's not actually the truth because no one is there to police you on that, right? No one's like, Chelsea, you did 5 years of podcasting. You better stick it all the way through. Like, I can tell you right now, I probably won't do podcast coaching for the rest of my life. Like,
yeah.
So many other things that I want to do, but I feel lucky to know that that's like how I operate. And that's through a lot of spirituality and self-discovery. But I know there's a lot of people listening right now that are like, but I am 40 and I have been a nurse for 20 years. And this is my income. And, you know, I can't just like pick up and move around and do whatever I want. What would you advise people that are kind of in that headspace of that they do feel like the investment and stuff is too far in to back out or change paths now?
Depends. We're talking about the example of someone who's like with an established career or something like that. Like the deeper you get into it, the deeper that sunk cost fallacy gets for you, right? Like the more years you have baked onto it. But I think carve yourself out two paths and draw them out and paint a picture. You know, the one to your right is you stay in that fallacy, even though you're woke now that it's not for you. What does that feel like? If you do 20 years more of X thing that you're like, this isn't actually who I am and what I spend my nights doing, you know, and my weekends doing is actually this thing that I'm really passionate about. What is that dissonance going to do for you? What is that displacement going to feel like? How are you going to treat other people around you because you're upset with how your life looks? How are you going to be like all of the pieces of your life? What are they going to feel like, look like, be like, et cetera, in that way? And if you go alternatively, okay, what's the other path of if I air quotes give up what I've spent all my time doing, but I actually go balls to the wall of trying to connect with myself finally and listen to the knocking that's been at that window, what does that feel like? It's probably going to feel really fucking uncomfortable for like the first little bit, right? Because you're going to go, I don't know what's going on. It's not like that like roller coaster effect of like, this feels great. Oh my God, it's going down. This feels great. Oh my God, it's going down. Where it's going to feel great, but it's going to feel like you're going down too. But then beyond that, what decisions are you now changing? How is it changing? Like how you think, how you experience your morning, how you speak to people, how you treat them, like all of that stuff, because you're in a state where you're like, this is aligning with me and I'm actually being who I'm meant to be. One is like, they're both hard. Just which hard do you want? And which is more authentic for you? And I'm not saying one is better than any other. You can choose either. But painting a picture, I think, of like what those two experiences look like, there's pain in both of them. Which pain do you want?
Oh, that's a really strong and powerful exercise. Like, I think that's even a good journal prompt right now for anyone that's listening that's struggling with this is like, write out the one path, write out the other, and really take time to like go meditate, think about it, feel into it in your body of like, what is this going to feel like if I keep going down this path or if I'm open to changing? I think maybe a point to make here too is it doesn't have to be drastic, right? There's always these stories online of like, I quit my job and overnight I made this decision and then all of a sudden things took off for me. And it's like, this could take weeks, months, or years. This could take a very long time to be like, you know what? I need to figure this out. I don't like to live in the la la land of like, oh my God, just make it happen and energy will work with you. It's like, we have bills to pay. Some of us have like very real responsibilities, whether that's medical or kids or parents or whatever the case is. Like, we don't have the ability to just like quit our job tomorrow and start fresh on Monday. So we need to keep in mind, like, we are living in a world where that's the system we operate in. But I think it's important for everyone to hear, you don't need it to be drastic to be effective or important or mean something. It can take you maybe 3, 5, 10, 20 years to figure this out, but I would rather people figure it out at some point than completely ignore that tap on the window.
Absolutely. Like, you can build a transition to that, but it's honoring the fact that you are aware now of it and you're not going to ignore it anymore. That is the biggest difference. And then how you make those steps towards that, however you want and how long as you want, honoring the fact that you are aware of it now is going to instantly make you feel more aligned to your true self. Like, it is. And so, like, I'm in that process too of like reconstructing little bits of my life, like pieces at a time. And this is a years long process of going like, how am I going to build a transition and like micro improve to a life that's more aligned to what I know that is my purpose now. And then just like do it all together on a whim, because that's way too much for one, your nervous system to take, but also like reality to absorb. Like, you can't, I guess, just flip it and Hail Mary and see what happens. But like, that's probably going to be more painful. So I would not recommend. It's the awareness, I think, is like almost the most uncomfortable piece. And then going, okay, now that I've digested that and like my nervous system is okay with this is the life and the person I want to live as, because it's the actual true version of me. Great. Now, how do we want to do that? And doing it from like a calm place rather than a reactive action type of place. One thing I think that is like really relevant probably to a lot of listeners, and that this happens all the time, is like in college and university, right? Where we think we have this path that because mommy asked when we were 3, what do you want to be when you grow up? And we went, I want to be a doctor. And now you're in med school and you're like, I absolutely hate this. And so for anyone that's like in that place, one, to all of our comments before, like the sunk cost fallacy thing, like you're not that many years in, even though you like think you're a lot of dollars in, think about what your life is like 60 years into that. And you still are like, I don't want to be a doctor. That'll help you give some leverage. But like, it's okay at any point in your life to pivot. It's okay at any point in your life to start over. I don't think you could talk to a person on the street who hasn't made some sort of pivot or shift in their life that was big, but there are those who wish they did that sooner. And I think most of the time they'll tell you they wish they did that sooner. And I don't think that people will tell you that they regret it either. So, you know, it might seem like such a big move to make, but you don't have to do it all at once. And that awareness of like, okay, this isn't what I want anymore. That just honoring of yourself and that truth is going to be its own sense of freedom without even making the changes yet.
Oh, it's so true. And I think this is why people like you exist, to help people through this process. You don't have to do this alone. There's people like Melissa who are there to guide you. So when you feel like you're on that roller coaster, you're not like, I don't know how to get off. No one's here like to help me run this. No one's here helping me buckle in and buckle out. It's like, that's why coaches and mentors exist. They're there because they've either walked the walk before, they've talked the talk, they've lived through it, and they're there to guide you so you don't have to do it alone. So I think that brings me to our closing, is that I imagine people are going to want to work with you and realize like, I do need this help. I do need this guidance, and I want it from Melissa. So can you tell everyone what you're offering and how you work with people?
Yeah, absolutely. So I work with people one-on-one right now in really like in a truly personalized way, assessing where you are and what you want as well. So you might be somebody who is like, I have no idea what my purpose is. I just know like I'm meant for more than this and what my life looks like right now. And like, that's totally cool. If you don't have a clue, we're going to dig into it and get you to a place. And my promise really is in working with clients, like I want you to get to a place where you not only understand your purpose, but you live it out in reality and actually live it in your life. So how are we going to make a plan for those changes that you can make in your life once you do know that purpose, so that it's not just knowing, but it's actually living it. And so wherever you are in your journey, whether that's like, I have totally no idea, or I have somewhat of idea, or I had this kind of idea of it, but I need to put legs on it. And maybe you want to make a business out of it. Like, again, you don't have to monetize, but wherever you are in that journey, I work with you one-on-one to help you understand that and make that roadmap and plan of how to make your life really reflect that. So that is what I do right now. I'm currently enrolling new students for my one-on-one coaching. So if you are interested in that, I think Chelsea will have the links and all the goodies in the show notes, but I'm always happy to just chat with you too about where you're at and like what you're struggling with and how this could be a fit for you and help you.
And you have an amazing podcast that could also help them. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, for sure. So I also run a podcast. It's called The Pursuit of Purpose Podcast, and talk a ton of these topics that we were talking about today. So, you know, if you want to just plug into that and get a lot of the topics that we were talking about here totally for free, come over and listen to The Pursuit of Purpose. We'd love to have you over there and in that bubble.
Yes, you're definitely going to want to follow Melissa, listen to her podcast. The work she does is incredible. Take the opportunity to work with her one-on-one. I don't think you're going to be disappointed, especially listening to this conversation today. And thank you so much, Melissa, for coming on. This was truly, truly insightful.
Loved it. Had so much fun. And I mean, I could talk with you for hours about all the things. So we'll see. Maybe we do another time.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
There you have it. Another episode of In My Non-Expert Opinion with an incredible guest, Melissa Barham. I really, really hope you took something away from today's episode, whether that's about safety as a female solo traveler or looking at life from a different lens and knowing that there's multiple ways to tap into your purpose and it doesn't always have to tie it with work. Be sure to check out the show notes and follow all of Melissa's work and listen to her podcast. She's so amazing at what she does. And you know where to find me at Chelsea Reif on Instagram, chelseareif.com. And if you leave a review this month, you'll be entered into a giveaway to win a 20-minute one-on-one coaching session with me. So all you have to do, and I want you to listen to this because people don't know how to write reviews on Apple, okay? All you have to do is go to Apple Podcasts, find my podcast In My Non-Expert Opinion, and scroll down almost as if you were going to try to go listen to episode one, for example. So scroll down and then you'll hit the section where it says reviews, and then you'll see it says write a review. So click that and rate it 5 stars at the top, and then write out your review. Then screenshot that review before you hit submit, because Apple's really weird and sometimes the reviews take like 4 weeks to show up, and I want you to win this ASAP. So screenshot it before you actually hit submit into Apple and then send that screenshot to me at Chelsea Reif on Instagram, which to be honest, I'm taking a little break from. So maybe it's best to send it to me at my email info@chelseareif.com. And then at the end of the month of September, I will pull one winner to win a 20-minute coaching session with me. Now, your chances are really high, guys. People don't leave a lot of reviews, so you could be one of the lucky winners, and we can talk about anything from travel to podcasting to mindset. Whatever you need help with in this 20-minute session, I'm here to help you. Just a reminder, if you want to launch your own podcast and be able to talk to incredible guests like Melissa, you can inside Mic Drop. Mic Drop is the ultimate podcast launch course and will take you from everything you need to know about launching a podcast. So recording your trailer, finding cover art, picking a name, all that initial planning stuff, plus recording tips, pointers, what softwares to use, what microphones to buy, how to plan episodes, how to promote it. Every single thing is inside Mic Drop, and you can choose from either paying in full or 3 monthly payment plans. You'll find all of that at chelseareif.com. And as always, email me with any questions. I hope to hear your podcast on the airwaves very soon. Now, final announcement, there's a hotline for In My Non-Expert Opinion. Did you know that? It's in the show notes, and I feel like I haven't really been calling it out, but you can actually call into the podcast. I will answer your question on air. So if there's one really, really specific question or something that you wanted advice on forever, go leave a voice note to that hotline. It's in the show notes. You'll see it. You click it and you'll record it right on your computer. I will get a notification about it, and then I will answer on air and we'll stitch it into the episode. All right. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.